Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And if you've got kids, if you are a grandmother, a grandfather, an aunt, an uncle, if you're at all involved with children on any level, I think my guest today is a woman that will impress you because she and a number of other people have decided to make a commitment to children and making our children more effectively equipped to live with life with purpose and with value. My guest today is Betty Young. The wonderful publication is Teaching Kids to Care, Nurturing Character and Compassion. Betty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You're the Pulitzer Prize-nominated author of 34 books translated into 24 languages. You are a former Teacher of the Year. You're a university professor of graduate school education and the director of Instruction and Professional Development, Inc. You've been on all kinds of television and radio shows, and you are a part of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. They have recognized your work. You have been so much involved with kids, with educators. You have obviously a real passion for this, and you and your associates, Joan Wolf, Joni Wafer, and Don Lehman, decided to put this book together. Tell us a little bit about how Teaching Kids to Care was birthed. What caused the button to be pushed where you felt this was something that was necessary to talk about?
Well, I think it's been birthed, for lots of reasons. The biggest one is Teaching Kids to Care originates from Kids Corps. Kids Corps is an organization that's 14 years old, and for 14 years we've been teaching parents and schools and kids themselves how to look out for others just as much as they look out for themselves. And so this book is very squarely rooted on research of what does it take to build character and compassion in kids? And we've come up with these five touchstones that we know that when these things are present in kids, when we work with these and develop them in kids, kids learn how to look out for others and be caring and compassionate people. So it's based on basically, work and research that's been going on for 14 years. And kids across the country can join Kids Corps. I mean, parents can start organizations within their communities and hook them up to schools and that sort of thing. So this is, not just another parenting book. This is firm research that's rooted in programs that we've been working with for 14 years.
You have a quote right at the beginning of your book by Robert Updegraff, and I'd like to share it. The world sorely needs the healing influence of a great surge of simple thoughtfulness and kind-heartedness. Such a surge is beyond the power of the world's greatest rulers or statesmen. It must start with us as individuals. Right in our home communities, we average citizens can establish the spirit and set the pattern of a kindlier world. In today's world, we are bombarded with all kinds of information that says that it's dog-eat-dog and it is something that we must be prepared to enter a world that's not a friendly world. And we get this from so many different effects, whether it's advertising, whether it's conversation we might overhear as a child with adults, and a youngster might be living in a very, very rough environment. Now, I have to say, I can recall many years ago the same kind of thing happening. I don't know when it hasn't been going on. But I really liked your book because it is educating adults. And I think that one of the things we need. We don't have the role models we should have, but they are there if we're able to find them. And your Kids Core group is giving an example of how adults can be effective parents, how they can be effective leaders, how they can demonstrate to children and young people that the world can be more of their making as they really want it to be than typically what is given as a concept that they are powerless. They don't have any opportunity. You have a section right up in the front of your book about parenting style. Talk to us about the parenting style and what in your research you have found is a good balance, because there's no such thing as a straight line with parenting. We don't come equipped with an automatic reference book.
Right. Well, of course, there's the permissive parent, the uninvolved parent, the authoritative parent, and the authoritarian parent. But, you know, there's two, what we look at today's time are basically, you can kind of classify parents into two realms. One is the parent who is too uninvolved. They say, well, kids will be kids. Or they're so busy with their own issues. They're bringing home a briefcase in their hand and a briefcase in their head. Or, you know, the families are blended families, and everybody thinks that the other parent is picking up the pieces, and no one's picking up the pieces. The child is falling between the cracks. And so there's that there is that parenting where not enough focus is going on. You know, no one's looking. You know, is your child building bombs or taking guns apart in the basement? No one's watching if to see if, in fact, young children are stumbling across porn sites on the Internet. There's that sort of thing. And then there is the what we call a helicopter parent. And the helicopter parent is the parent who hovers around their children, basically tying their shoes for them, doing everything for them. And so the child is left feeling that, one, they're entitled, and so, two, someone will pick up the pieces after him and do the work for him. And some of these parents do the work for them. You know, sometimes a parent will do the child's homework, and they do it with good intentions. They're like, well, I want my child to get a good grade, and, oh, you know, I really do need to buy my child all these gadgets. After all, everyone else has them, and I don't want my child to feel left out. So they're doing too much for their children, and they just basically are creating kids who won't do things for others and who believes that it is all about me. So we really do worry about those kinds of parenting styles, and we ask parents to check on their parenting. But in this book, you know, there's an example that I think, while it's an acute example, I think it's worth talking about, and that is we start this book out by taking a look, you know, at this little Eddie who, and that's a true story and the world remembers it, who was heading through a park and stumbled across 14, or seven rather, boys who beat him to death. And as dramatic and tragic as that is, what is even more tragic is that 24 kids around stood there with their cell phones in their pockets and neighbors across the street where they didn't run to go get help. They stood there. They did not help this boy. They didn't feel they could marshal enough leadership. They didn't feel, you know, they were frightened. They had all of these excuses. And the point is, what would your child do? And we ask that to parents all the time in workshops. What would your child do in any sort of a situation? He's at school. There's another new child that's new and feeling geeky or feeling alone. You know, there's the neighbor who needs help with his or her yard. You know, we're asking, how does your child respond to the world? How does your child see himself as a capable, competent person who is willing and able to help others, to assist and support others? And in this example of this child in the park, most parents say, oh, well, my child would never do that. And I'll bet those 24 parents whose children did stand and watch in horror and in disbelief, you know, I bet many of those parents felt that their child would not have done that, that there would have been a different sort of response. So in this book, we say to parents, you know, in today's world, you want your child to be happy and healthy and confident. Do you know that children who get out of their own, out of their own skin, get into caring about others, or doing things, supporting, assisting others, do you know that those are the happiest, most productive, achieving children? And by the way, there are five things that you can do to help your child be a kid who has good character and is willing to help and assist others. And those are what we call five touchstones, and they are the touchstone of interdependence. You know, are we raising kids who can depend on each other? They're the touchstone of connection. You know, does your child know how to blend and bond and belong, but in healthy ways, not in negative peer pressure ways? There's the touchstone of perspective. You know, how does your child see the world around him? You know, how does your child see the world around him is a very important question. And number four is the touchstone of gratitude. You know, is your child a person who is grateful for what he has? And if he is grateful, is he then willing to want others to get their fair share? And the last of the touchstone is inspiration. And is your child living with passion? Is your child living with a sense of zest and zeal? And would he know it if he had it? And does he care that others have it as well? So, again, this book says to parents, you know, examine your parenting style, but, you know, above all, work for building character and compassion in your child. And whether you have 3 minutes, 3 seconds, 3 days, 3 months, here are things you can do to build each and every one of these touchstones in your child.
I really liked the section you have on why interdependence is a good thing for kids. I think that childhood is the preparation time for becoming a secure, successful, productive adult. And as parents, that's what we try to do, to be able to teach our children as much as possible. And I really like what you say, that interdependence, what it involves is a belief in their own abilities. It involves self-esteem, healthy self-esteem, a willingness to accept responsibility, willingness to lead, a good support system, a greater sense of purpose. This is so significant. There are so many adults that don't even have this.
Well, exactly. You know, first of all, maybe a definition for those who are listening. Being interdependent means you can count on me to help, support, and assist you along the way. And the reason why developing this sense of interdependence in kids is good for them is that if I can count on me to assist and support and help you, then it is more likely that I'll be doing those things, and I will build a storehouse of positive things for me to, that sends me the message back. I'm a capable, competent kid, and I can help you, and I will help you. I'll see myself as capable and helpful and responsible to you. And the bigger that storehouse is of a child watching himself, herself do that for others, the more likely that child is going to trust that others are going to support, assist, and help back. And those things help deny feelings of loneliness, feelings of alienation, feelings of isolation, feeling of just being alone in the world. All of those things that build inner trust, we call it an inner storehouse, they all attribute to building psychological hardiness in your child. And you want that for your child. You want your child to feel capable and competent. And your child has to be doing things in order to see himself so that he really gets that lesson. You know, self-esteem is a reputation that you hold with yourself. You don't get a reputation of seeing yourself as capable and competent by blowing yourself a kiss in the mirror every morning. You get it, and nor do you get it by somebody else patting you on the head saying you're such a good kid or you're such a nice person. You get it by watching yourself act out responsible acts, and the messages that come back say, I'm a worthy person. I watch myself do worthwhile things. And so, again, a sense of interdependence helps kids know that if they can count on others, that if others can count on them, they can count on others back. And there are, by the way, four ways that parents instill interdependence in kids. And the first one is that they model that behavior. They show they're interdependent. They say things like, so-and-so needs to count on me, I can count on them. They talk to kids about the importance of being cooperative with others, being in cooperation. And they provide their child with a sense of opportunities to interact with others. You know, sometimes parents have to literally take their child and drag them into an opportunity so that your child can learn these things. I know that, like in Kids Corps, when we take kids down to help maybe feed the homeless or to wash graffiti off a wall or to build a home for the Fuller Center for Housing or Habitat for Humanity, sometimes kids just don't want to do that. And we take them anyway, and we take them into the experience and show them as they're moving through the experience how they're being helpful and in what ways this is, you know, good for them and good for others. And eventually they learn it. And in the beginning they will say things like, especially in serving the homeless, they will say, well, I'm afraid of those kinds of people. In other words, they haven't had the exposure, or they think that building a house is, you know, hardship. Without having the experience first. So again, we say to parents, take your child into the experience, provide for the opportunity and take your child there. And then the fourth way, by the way, for building interdependence is that we teach our children to think globally, but to act locally. In other words, to care about what's going on in Iraq and Darfur and all of those places, and then to not just think about that and let it go, then to go ahead and do something locally that helps feed, clothe, house, and, you know, in some way, is being responsible for others along the way.
All of this, I think, is so important because there is a tendency, I think, when you're extremely busy, when parents are, let's say both parents are working and the kids are in school and you're on a very, very intense schedule, I think it's a great project when you can be involved with an activity through your church, through your community, or with Kids Corps, anything that takes maybe the family as the unit. It doesn't make any difference if you're a single parent or whether you're, you know, a mom and a pop together or grandma and grandpa, whatever it takes. But what you do is that you participate in something that the kids actually are going to be actively involved in. I think one of the realities of life is that until you can really touch an experience, until you can really feel it, you can read it, you can watch something on television, you can intellectualize it, but until you're actually a part of it and you're side by side with someone else, and it's like you're talking about building a house, then a kid is out there with an adult, and they're being shown how to put a nail to a piece of wood, and that you do it a certain way so that wood is going to stay in place for a frame because the house is going to be built. It's going to be a shelter for someone. When you have that, when they're getting sweaty, when they're getting dirty, when they're in there working, there is a sense of pride that can come with that. And it's not a negative sense of pride. It's a positive sense of pride of being a participant in this. And it was wonderful to me hearing about Kids Corps, because I think that that is bringing something into the thinking of people on so many different levels, whether they're economically on a low level or a high level. It doesn't make any difference. It's being actively involved.
That's right. And, you know, and we were talking about earlier about in this book, in each one of these touchstones, and you and I are now are talking about interdependence, there's activities for parents to look at on how they begin to instill this. And we literally use the, if you have 3 minutes, if you have 30 minutes, if you have 3 hours, if you have 3 days, if you have 3 months. But, you know, to, for example, holding open a door for someone, you know, is a 3-second sort of activity. Or taking food to someone in your neighborhood who needs it, or helping someone go get medicine if you've got, you know, 30 minutes, or you know, baking cookies or and delivering them to the fire department, or those kinds of things where we're showing others that we are in appreciation, building a house as a weekend activity for Habitat for Humanity or the Fuller Center for Housing. But in each of these areas, we say to parents, these are the kinds of activities, and talk about them. For goodness sakes, don't just do them. Talk about them, and talk about them at the table on how these things contribute. What, you know, why do we abide by the laws? You know, parents need to teach their children these things. And to talk about the activities again so that children know exactly how they build for others a sense that they're feeling connected to others, that others will care about them, and so on. So these are very important activities. But when we set out to write this book, we certainly wanted it to be a parenting book, but we want it to be even more than a parenting book. We want it to we want to showcase how these five touchstones have worked for 14 years to develop really sound leadership in young people. And we want parents to know that we can't just rely on programs for these things to be taught, that parents can do it too. And so in this book is for parents to really understand how the importance of it, first of all, how it contributes to happy and self-confident and capable kids with a sense of worthy and authentic sense of self. But we want parents to feel confident that they can do these things.
You make a statement in your book that we can help wire in what becomes important to our kids. And I think in many instances that's very true. There's a lot of influences in life, and as individuals, we all make choices, good, bad, or indifferent. So when you can walk the walk, not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, be the example for your children, and then involve them in activities where they have a chance to see how your example has value and to be a participant in this, whether it's with animals, whether it's with senior citizens, I think that's so important, and I really like the idea of taking the young kids and interacting with the older people, because I think they need each other. I think that's a very healthy balance. I think the young give energy to the old, and the old give wisdom and insight to the young. And
right.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful partnership, and I'm so delighted to see that your organization is supporting of that. You get some wonderful examples in your books, some great stories. Why don't you talk about Kevin a little bit? He was a kid that started out with a rocky situation in life, but his parents went through some ups and downs. Talk about this situation and what happened with Kevin.
Well, you know, again, he was somebody who, like in each of these examples in the book, we use a real-life child and a real-life example. And so oftentimes in life, children are, you know, difficult to motivate. You know, they haven't, there are times in their lives where nothing quite resonates with them. They haven't picked up a passion for something, or they're shy, or they're considered geeky or nerdy, or sometimes they're just arrogant and very self-centered. And so with even with Kevin, you know, there is this sense within him that he's just not like others, and then he gets in and starts working and doing things. The experiences that he has, he begins to bloom. And by the way, you know, you were talking a little bit earlier about the changes in kids. You know, what is nice is that there is a time where when you start working with these five areas with your children, there is a time when that leadership kicks in. And you almost like just need to move out of the way and watch your child begin to do things for others. Because, again, with this program, we watch, when we take kids through each of these five areas, when we give them experiences in each of these five areas where they get a chance to see interdependence and connection, and when they get a chance to work with each of the five, pretty soon they will find things to do themselves within their schools and within their communities, because these do build leadership, just leadership skills, just as it did for Kevin.
Kevin was quite an interesting story in my mind's view.
What did you enjoy most about it?
Well, I think because in a sense he was an extreme. He had come into this world experiencing a very difficult birth. His parents had overindulged him, and then his mom overheard him making a conversation with someone about a car, and the kid that was sitting with him said, well, which one do you want? He said, oh, Mustang, Corvette. And he said, well, which one do you think you want? He said, it doesn't make any difference. My parents will get me whatever I like.
Isn't that so true with so many children? Yep. You know, they do believe that their parents, this is, you know, an example of the helicopter parent where Kevin's parents, you know, felt that, you know, whatever their child needed, whatever they felt he needed, they provided. But Kevin, you know, that was in the chapter on gratitude. And for Kevin, it was a matter of realizing that not everyone, that those experiences were not just, they didn't just come automatically. Kevin eventually learned that, you know, it was better to, that, you know, that he could get out of his own skin and do something for others.
Yes, he did, and it was his mother that made the change.
Well, eventually they decided that, mm-hmm. you know, he was realizing that he was going to get anything that he wanted, and they decided that it was time that he helped give some things away.
Right, and he was 10 years old when they started this. So here
well,
he was, for 10 years of his life, pretty much expecting he could get and have anything he wanted, and then it was a switch that his mom said, enough is enough, and his mom and dad had a good conversation and said, wait a minute, this is not what we want our son to learn. And I really liked what his parents did together, and this was so significant to me. Together they did it. And they went into his room with three large boxes, and they labeled them trash, charity, and resale. And they said, you're going to go through everything in your room to determine if it's getting used or if it's just taking up space, if you're not using it, and we'll decide which box it goes into. And he didn't want to do this, but they made
him
do it.
Well, you know, not too many kids do. And of course, the point is, you know, how these parents realized that what they needed to do was to help their child realize that, you know, it wasn't all about Kevin, it wasn't all about himself. And how do you take a child who has everything, who has a sense of entitlement, and begin to help that child realize that others need too, and to develop a sense of gratitude? And this is how they did it. And, you know, again, following the steps. And so they taught him how to be grateful for what he had so that he felt he didn't need everything. It worked as well.
Yes. And 2 years after they started this, or actually more than that, by the time he was a senior in high school, because of the consistency with this and his involvement in charity, because with the money that he got from selling some of his items, they said one-third of it is yours to keep, one-third goes into a savings account, and we'll donate the final third to a charity of your choice. Right there, it was so significant because it gave him a platform to work with, and I'm sure he was sort of ruffled around the edges, but he was still in that formative period. And then by being involved with all of these different choices and seeing things from different perspectives, it was a joy to read how, as a senior, he ends up giving a gift to a very special teacher, Mr. Paul.
Right, he gives the award that he had received. Well, you know, and that again is the outcome, isn't it? And that is that if we teach young people how to do these things, if we teach them how to be grateful, if we teach them how to be interdependent, if we teach them how to connect and learn connection in positive ways, if we teach them these things, they begin to use them. I mean, they begin to apply them. And so for Kevin, you know, for in the beginning, it was like all about me. What do I have? What can I get? What do I need and want next? And here he recognizes Mr. Paul. Mr. Paul, if you remember, was the custodian, and he'd never been recognized for practically anything. And Kevin begins to look around and say, you know, look, this is the guy who, you know, helps us. He unlocks our cars when we lock our keys in them. He picks up, you know, our lost keys and finds them. He picks up our coats and our sweaters. He picks up notes. You know, he helps other teens talk about their tears. What are those tears about? What's, you know, what's wrong? Who called you a name now? And here was this custodian in this school. And what Kevin realized over time was that this man did all of these things, and without awards, without people saying thank you. And so at the end of the day, when he picks up his award, he said, I'd like to give this award or share this award with someone who rarely gets recognized. And, of course, then he shares the award. But, again, that's the outcome of creating somebody who is caring. I mean, Kevin ended up being somebody who was a caring young man who was capable of seeing that he wasn't the only person, in his world, in his school. And that's what we're trying to do, isn't it, with our children. We're wanting them to certainly be capable and competent, but to care that others are as well. We want them to be safe and to learn how to be safe, but we want them to create a situation, a world around them, in their neighborhoods and in the world, where they are willing to help others be safe as well. So again,
absolutely,
the goal is to help these things wear off on others, for others.
Betty Young has been my guest today. Betty, I know that you're affiliated with KidCore and USA National Headquarters are in Solana Beach, California. And is your website kids kidscore.org?
Well, you can certainly go to www.kidscore.org or my website, which is carries that resource as well, and other books for parents, and that's www.bettyyoungs.com, Betty, B-E-T-T-I-E, Youngs, Y-O-U-N-G-S, and that links you up to KidsCore, and so that you can take a look at the programs and how to get in touch with KidsCore.
Now, again, my guest today has been Betty Youngs. The book is Teaching Kids to Care, Nurturing Character, and Compassion. Do go to her website, BettyYoungs.com, B-E-T-T-I-E, Youngs, Y-O-U-N-G-S.com. Not only will you find out about the book, but you'll find out about KidsCore. You'll find out about dedicated professionals who want to pass along what they have learned from their research of 14 years. But more than anything else, it's an example for us as adults to pass along to our younger generation because they are going to be the leaders of their world. We want them to have as much empowerment as possible. Betty, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We've got a lot of good things to share. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. And if you're a new listener to the show, welcome. So delighted you're part of our family of listeners. Here is a toll-free number if you would like to be given a little insight about your life, 877-876-5227. That's in the U.S., 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And just know you call in. I'll only need your first name or initial. And of course, I'd love to know what part of the country you're calling in from. And then after that, just let me do my thing, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you like. When I was talking with Betty Young, some items popped up into my head, and I thought I'd share them with you, because I think that our responsibility as adults is to be a good example to children. I think teaching them how to be courteous, teaching them how to adapt to social situations, how to become problem solvers, all of this is our responsibility as parents. And I recall hearing Jack Canfield say how, and I'm sure you, many of you know who he is, the Chicken Soup for the Soul. He and Mark Victor Hansen put that together. When he was being interviewed in the very successful movie The Secret, he made a comment about his own life. And he said that he grew up in a very dysfunctional family. His father was an alcoholic, and he was abused and all kinds of stuff. And he makes a point in his statement. He said 85% of us come from dysfunctional families. Get over it. And I thought that was a very, very good statement to make, because that's true. You are, no matter who you are in life, you're always going to have your lumps and your bumps. When you are fortunate enough to be around adults who are going to show you how to deal with challenges, you're very fortunate. Sometimes your best teachers are going to be those that are maybe with a church or with an organization like Kids Corps or some other very fine organization. But if you are someone that is given good exposure by mature, together adults, you learn. And there was a teacher, and teachers have profound influences on children, profound influences. And this one teacher had gotten his whole class involved in going to a homeless facility. Now, these were kids that were upper middle class. And so they're all on a bus, and they are transported over to this facility. And the teacher says, I'm going to meet you there because I've got a meeting, and I will be there shortly after you arrive. So the kids, the bus takes them to this particular facility. It arrives at the location at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they all get off the bus. Well, as they get off the bus, they see this individual, a homeless man, on a bench. As they're walking by, they make snide remarks. They have all kinds of comments to say about this man. They proceed to walk into the building. Now, there were about 30 kids that were participating in this. And so they're standing around in the lobby, and they're impatient because the teacher hadn't arrived, and time goes by. It's to be about 10 o'clock. Well, while they were waiting in the lobby, of course, they were talking about this real derelict character that had been out in front. So they're making their snide remarks. Close to 10 o'clock, this derelict character walks into the lobby, and some of the kids are making remarks, making faces. They're snickering behind their hands, and they're just bored out of their minds. Then the derelict character takes off his hat and a wig and turns to face the entire class that's in this lobby, and it was their teacher. They were totally and completely mortified. First, they started to laugh, and he just stood there. He didn't say anything to them. And then they became very, very quiet because their embarrassment was very, very high. And he very quietly said to them, "You were making judgments about the man on the bench without taking time to find out who he was. I was that man on the bench. And I did this for the purpose of helping you understand you cannot always judge things by appearances." And he said, "Today, while we're here, I want you to keep that in mind." By the time he finished interacting with the kids and having them interact with the people at the facility, it really changed their attitudes on a lot of things. And he had them participate in some other activities, and every one of the kids in that class had a different perspective. They realized that they needed to not assume a lot of things, and that people could play games could deceive them purposefully. But maybe if they took time to really ask questions or to investigate, they'd find out the right answers. There is so much in life where we have preconceived conceptions, perceptions, paradigms, whatever term you want to use. And I think it's so important for us to stand back sometimes and just stand down and try to walk in somebody else's shoes. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to understand hunger if you've never been there. And I'm not talking about, gee, it's 5 o'clock, I haven't had a meal since 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm talking about real hunger. It's not easy to understand poverty if you've never been around it. It has its own particular smell. It has its own grouping of circumstances. It's not something that's pretty. So I really liked what Betty Young said is, think globally, but be aware locally, because there's a lot of things right around where you are. I can think of just so many different particulars in my own local neighborhood. There's a vet who begs for towels because he takes care and volunteers to take care of a lot of animals that are abandoned and injured. He needs the towels. Why? Any old towels. Get rid of them. Give them to the vet. You may have a homeless shelter. You might have a women's abuse center, support groups. There might be a food bank that you can contribute to. It makes a difference. And when you can get your kids involved, when you can let them see what other people go through, having volunteered at a hospital, life has some pretty rough scenes. And the only way you can really help a youngster grow and mature with an understanding of compassion and of kindness, because not everybody is going to have a multi-million-dollar life. Not everybody wants it. Not everybody is going to be able to do the things that maybe they see on television. But when you can instill in someone a sense of personal pride, self-satisfaction, when you can educate them, when you can teach them to read, have a love for learning, and when you can help them recognize that there's always an interdependence. Individuality is a wonderful thing, and I believe in it very strongly, and dependence is a very good thing. But you know, we all have to be dependent on something and someone every moment of our lives, just the way it is. And it's not good, it's not bad. So it's being able to utilize that in a very positive way so that our young children, our young adults, have a purpose of realizing how important they are as individuals, and as individuals collectively, when they can work together for right purpose, there won't be the situations with the eddies in life because nobody will stand around and watch it happen. But we've had situations with adults that have done the very same thing that those young people did. The 24 that stood around and watched a young man being beaten to death. The question is, how would their parents have done it? What else would have happened? There's so much that goes on in life when we don't understand. And I don't know that we can really judge it because we're not in their shoes. But what we can do is to teach and to educate and to share. And I like to think that that's one of the gifts that comes from this programming. Here on BBS for the Donna Sebo Show, what we like to do is to bring to you information, resources, and connections. And when you have access to that, then you're going to have access to so much that you didn't even know was available to you. And that is wonderful. And that's what brings me such a sense of joy every time I do the show, because I am learning with everything that I present. It's wonderful, and it's expansive. And remember, you're always going to be able to share that with someone else. Remember, you are important. No matter who you are, no matter what status you have in life, whether you're making $20 a day, $5 a day, or $5 billion a day, it doesn't make any difference. You make a difference by being the quality person you can be. By sharing what you can in any given moment, whether it's a smile, a dollar bill, an idea. It doesn't make any difference. Be who you are. This world will be richer because you are. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756 for Canadians. I wanted to share something with you that I was starting to share, and I think we've got a caller. Do you have a caller on the line? I guess not. Okay. I wanted to share some information with you. I started it yesterday, and we ran out of time. And it's about cosmetics. And, of course, there are so many of us who, every time we think about animals being used for this cosmetic research and some other things, it can be a little bit upsetting. Well,
hello.
Oh, we do have a caller. Okay.
I'm sorry I didn't speak up.
Oh, that's all right. I didn't hear you. I thought I heard something, but I wasn't sure, and then when there wasn't a response. I'll continue with this information on cosmetic labs after we get through. What's your first name or initial, please?
Michael.
Hi, Michael, and where are you calling from?
Carmel.
Carmel, California. Welcome.
Yes.
All right, Michael, what I'm looking at with you is keeping your business nose to the grindstone, but not getting ground. I'm looking at you really being quite attentive to detail. I like what I see, and I feel as if you are making a major breakthrough because you have been willing to watch, look, listen, absorb what you needed to absorb, and discard what was not workable for you. And I'm seeing you coming to a positioning of decision-making that I think is going to be in place by the end of January. Now, the reason it's not going to be in place really in the form of action until the end of January is due to the fact that some holidays are coming up and there are going to be some interferences. So you have the diligence and understanding that if you're patient and you do it shortly after the first of the year, you're going to be in a much better positioning. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be resting on your laurels, not by any long shot. You are going to definitely be putting everything into positioning in place that you possibly can, and then you're going to work your strategy so that you take care of what you need to take care of efficiently, effectively, and well. This is excellent, and I really feel as if you're making some tremendous strides, and I'm looking at celebration in 2008, and you're saying to yourself, I've worked so hard. It has been a very long, diligent journey, and my persistence and patience is paying off, and then some, and I would agree with you. Now, coming back to this point in time when I'm looking at you, I am realizing you've got some challenges in your own personal environment, and you're dealing with some old belief systems that you're trying to, let's say, shift, and be patient with yourself, take it incrementally, and don't try to dissect stuff until it becomes dust. Just realize that if something isn't fitting in your belief system, that is no longer applicable to what the way you wish to live your life or how you wish to demonstrate your life, it's okay to let it go. You will have something to fill the void that would be there otherwise. What's on your mind, Michael? What did you want to ask me?
Well, you kind of covered it. I'm going for a second interview Monday with this company that I think I'd like to go to work for.
Okay. What's your question to me?
The first interview went well. And the name of the company starts with an A.
Okay.
And now the second interview, I haven't met this person, but I kind of like what I see so far.
What I'd like for you to do when you go into this second interview is just be yourself. I want you to have a sincere interest, and I know you've done your homework on this company.
Yes, I have.
You've done your research. And I would like for you, in your conversation with the person, after you have a chance to answer their questions and however, let them lead. Let them do the questioning. And then you'll know the point where you're comfortable. And then what I'd like you to do is ask the person who's interviewing you, what has been the greatest benefit of them working for this company? Why is it that they have found this company such a desirable environment to work in?
That's a great question.
And I'll tell you what, I think you're going to knock their socks off when you ask the question. Because
okay.
That's never asked by anyone.
No, and that's a great question.
And
well, you felt this is great, great input.
Now, what I'd like to have you understand, when you ask that question, they may say, well, what in the world is going to, what? Why did you even ask that question? You're going to say, well, in being here and talking with you, you obviously like this. And to me, it's important if I have the opportunity of working with this company. And I've done research on your company. But I really like to know how people feel about where they work, because if I have the opportunity to be here, I'd like for this to be a real team that I can become a part of.
Okay.
So if that, use your own words.
Yes, but I understand what you're saying.
What I'm getting from this individual that's going to be doing the interview, that type of interest in the human side of the company, because a company is only made up of people. But I think they're really looking for team players. They've got some big projects coming up, and they need team players.
Okay. Donna, you have a great weekend. I thank you very much for your input. It helped me tremendously.
Oh, fabulous, Michael. I'm so glad. How did you find out about the show?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
How did you find out about the show?
Somebody told me about it.
Well, I'm glad they did. Pass it on.
I will.
All right,
in fact, I have.
Thank you, Michael. You have a wonderful weekend, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz. Oops, I think we're not going to have enough time. So let me give you this information. This is the second day I've been trying to give it out. You know, rabbits, when they test them, and other animals wearing lipstick, cosmetics, all kinds of different things. Well, we've got something new on the agenda. Thank goodness for scientists that are looking for new ways of doing things. L'Oreal has developed an uncanny human skin substitute called EpiSkin that is animal-friendly and can determine whether an ingredient will turn toxic in the sun or corrode, penetrate, or irritate human skin. I've never heard this. Have you? Now, to make this is what they do. They take a layer of fish collagen, seed it with human skin cells discarded from plastic surgery. Now, 100 cells are able to multiply, and you can get 20 million cells within a week. Now, there's a lady, Patricia Pinot. She's a research communications director at this cosmetic forum of L'Oreal. And after 7 days, you have a patch of skin that can tan and age under UV light. And EpiSkin was used by L'Oreal to test some 3,000 products. Now, why did this come around? Well, necessity is the mother of invention, because the European Union Cosmetics Directive called for a ban on all animal testing by 2003. Period. They are really setting some high standards. The skin substitute is also being used to make customized grafts for burn victims and for children who can't handle exposure to UV light without risking cancer. This has so many levels of opportunity of value in medicine and in so many other ways. And I remember hearing about this being done by the Israelis because the soldiers that didn't have enough skin where they could graft. This was started many, many years ago. It is wonderful. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. Enjoy your weekend. Be safe. And we'll be back bright and sassy, same time, same place, on Monday. Bye for now.
I've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.